Today is August 18th, 2020, which I believe is the official 100th anniversary to the day of the final vote for the 19th Amendment for women's suffrage. So,
Although the more I hear more about it, so many things had to happen after that to get everybody in on the vote. But I don't know enough about voting rights. In fact, what is this all this stuff about voting rights legislation? I thought everyone had the right to vote. What's going like John Lewis's thing? What is that about?
All right. So to the best of my knowledge, so the Voting Rights Act, which is sort of circa 1965, actually required, and again, I'm not the world's greatest expert on this, but it required what they call pre-approval or I'm forgetting the legal term now, but when you we're going to do a change to the way you do some voting in your state, you know, even small things like redistricting and a lot of other things, you couldn't just do it. You actually had to get the okay up at the federal level. And then, but the thing is that after a certain, it wasn't, there was a presumption in 65 that in fact, certain states who had been bad actors for years wouldn't be bad actors for the rest of eternity, so that after a time they would no longer have to go through that. So
it had a sunset clause, you mean?
Yeah. So every 20 years you have to kind of renew it. And so what typically happens is you do it. But I think in the last round, maybe some states which had required pre-approval.
And the Supreme Court did something too. They took away.
Yeah. So I'm not really keeping up on it. But the thing is, it's not something that's an absolute set in stone law that is forever, because it's very much about these sort of like special regulations for certain states. So
what a mess. It's a mess.
Right. Now I'm sort of the forgiveness crowd that says, well, even if you were the worst player on earth, one day you will be you will be fully repented and you can be welcomed into the, you know, the to the rest of civilization, right? So to me, it's totally correct that some states should eventually be removed from this pre-approval status. The question is which states. And there's some triggers that say, well, if there are X number of filings of civil rights violations or whatever, then that will keep you on the list. But again, I'm not the expert.
I could probably get the bad actors, huh?
Yeah, you probably could. Right. But, you know, the thing is, there are some other states, honestly, have done some, you know, bad things that were not part of that. But, you
know. Well, that's true. Like gerrymandering, right? I'm saying it right?
Gerrymandering, yeah. But the thing is, that's something that's been around for a long time.
Right. And that's a threat,
You know, and certain types of gerrymandering is considered perfectly legal by the Supreme Court.
The Democrats do it and the Republicans do it. So it's
So it's just basically a matter of whoever's in power wants the whole power and they'll find a way to do it. You know, so it's just sort of the way things are.
Oh boy.
All right. So anyway, around town, I think it's appropriate to acknowledge the fact that there was a terrible, terrible thing happened in Cambridge today. It was a death of a cyclist in Harvard Square. Right on the bend as you sort of
I saw the aftermath, and that was like almost 2 hours later.
Right directly across from the Harvard Square kiosk on the Harvard side of the street. There's no need to go into the details of it all right now. I mean, people were already jumping to conclusions, which is something I really hate about.
I know, it's immediate. It's like, let's get a cycle track in there. Let's ban all, I mean,
Now,
all get the information.
Some or all of these ideas may be good ideas, but the thing is that it does offend me when people just try and capitalize on something before facts are actually even known here, you know, but it's what people do, you know. But anyway, so, you know, hearts go out to family and friends. Apparently the niece of the person who was killed was there was an interaction between them that somehow may play a role in this, but we'll see. I'll leave it to the investigators to determine.
There were certainly many state police there, and it was closed off for at least a few hours.
Right. It does bring up a kind of a question that's really unrelated to this, but it's a serious question, which is the appropriateness of highway grade, highway scale 18-wheel vehicles
going through Harvard Square,
Or any local roads,
especially now, I can't imagine they even did it,
right. And there are 18-wheelers and there are 18-wheelers. I mean, the thing is that the cyclist fatality in Porter Square was one of those 18-wheelers where there's a big squared off front where, even at best, the driver can't see in front of them,
right.
Now, if you have an 18-wheel vehicle, but the driver is right up at the window and can actually have complete visibility, then that's something I think you can work with.
Well, those are trucks that they're trying to get more in use, where it's a flat, it's like some of the buses are like
a way, like a bus driver. A bus driver is right there, has full view, right?
But until you do,
until you do,
be aware of that big massive thing near us. You know,
it's absolutely true. But I think there is something intrinsically unsafe about having a vehicle where the driver can't see in front of them.
Absolutely.
You know, a distracted driver.
I mean, that happens with SUVs. It happens.
Right. Now that's, I think that's perfectly fine if you're on an interstate highway. I don't think it's perfectly fine at all when you're passing through pedestrian intensive areas.
No. And that has to be looked at.
Right.
There's many factors here. I mean, that's
absolutely true. Yeah. Absolutely true. So that's very, very local and serious.
Yeah.
Now, meanwhile, you probably watched Ms. Nathans, you probably watched some pieces of the Democratic National Committee.
I watched all of it.
And I watched none of it.
And you know what? I found out, because I had a friend in Chicago that was texting me, that depending on the station you watched on, and now I know the regular networks had it only on from 10 to 11, but MSNBC and CNN had it on 9 to 11. MSNBC had no commercials. And I, because my friend texted me, said, are you watching? Is this, you seem to be getting something. So I turned to PBS, and they were talking about what had happened. MSNBC, so I don't know how that happened. I think maybe the Democrats maybe bought ad time on the cable stations so that they wouldn't be interrupted.
That's possible.
Yeah, of course, C-SPAN is your best bet. So you didn't watch anything? Oh, I thought it was great.
I don't know.
It was better than watching it live.
Well, it was better than watching the Red Sox and the Yankees.
Well, forget that. They're off. The Celtics did a good job.
Right.
Except they lost Gordon Hayward.
Yeah.
But anyway, getting back to that. So you didn't want to watch any of it?
It's not that I didn't want to watch it. It's just that, you know, I have to sort of be in the right mood. And I just really just wasn't in the mood to listen to
it. It was quickly. Eva Longoria, I mean, you know, people said, what? She's hosting? You know, she's an actress. But she was good.
I did see little snippets today of Michelle Obama. And I have to say,
18-minute speech.
But of all the people who are sort of political players, you know, even though she's not a candidate or whatever.
Right.
Few people exude such kind of empathy and humanity as she does. I mean, honestly, she's the best ticket they've got.
And from the some of the reviews I was reading about it was that because it was pre-recorded, it wasn't live, and it was in her living room or whatever, it was personal. And she is a very personal speaker, but she could have delivered that, they said, in front of 20,000 people, but this made it even more intimate. And I think that's going to bode well for them.
I think that it does work well.
Yeah. You didn't catch any of Bernie?
Nah, but I probably would have changed the channel anyway.
No, to be honest. He's certainly a lot better than he was for Hillary. Let's put it that way. But that's
right. Yeah, you mean a little touch of sincerity, maybe?
He really almost
died. Oh, okay.
He was good. And he's got a big thing of logs behind him, which was funny.
Well, he's just trying to play that Vermont card, I guess, there, right? Yeah. So, somehow bring up the Abe Lincoln log splitting image, right?
My last thing to say, if you want to see something funny about it, Stephen Colbert had a live show after that. You know, he's doing it in an off, whatever. The first 10 minutes are hysterical. You should watch it because he comments on, and it's just very good. You can catch
it. I'll look it up. I'll definitely look it up. Okay. Now, I have to ask, so, you know, there had been all this speculation about who was Joe Biden going to suggest as his vice presidential pick.
I'm happy.
It's funny how the convention doesn't seem to have any role in it. It's the presidential person is the one who just picks it, right?
Why? That was not the case years ago?
I don't think so. I think you still announce
your vice president.
You can announce it, but the thing is that ultimately it's still subject to approval of the convention.
That's true. I think they actually didn't announce it till the convention.
Right.
It's become
pretty much the tradition for some time now that the presidential nominee just picks it. But I don't know if that has always been the case.
I'll have to look that up.
Yeah. But it was kind of interesting with all the speculation. Then the choice was made. And then it's a matter of like, well, is that a good choice or a bad choice? Is this going to help? Is this going to hurt?
I think ultimately
it will probably help. But my reasoning for that is it's an interesting little jujitsu move. When it was Kamala Harris, the presidential candidate,
Kamala. It's Kamala. Right?
Kamala?
It's Kamala.
Okay.
Kamala. Right. I know. I've learned
Kamala,
that.
Kamala. Yeah.
Kamala. Okay.
That all right. I'm going to just turn in my political cards now. I'm done. No. The thing is, when she, as the candidate for president, people on the pretty much the hard left were sort of ganging up on her because, she's really a cop. She's, you know, she was a prosecutor and that's really where she's at. She's not really, you know, one of us and whatever, you know, but it, in a funny way now, because it is inevitable that the Trump people are going to play the law and order card as their number one strategy now. You know, it's like, you better vote us guys in because otherwise it's going to be crazy Marxists and it's going to be Portland all over,
Which is not her at all, and it's not Joe.
Well, so in a way, she's sort of an interesting counter to that. So you sort of say, oh, well, you know, we've got a prosecutor here. You know, it's it kind of works well, I think, in that regard. But, you know, politics is so much of it is about superficial perception as well. So it can be, you know, you could be based on actual substantive points, you could be the best or the worst, but still you may be elected or non-elected based on your height or your, the color of your shirt or something, you know, it's, you know, voters are very fickle that way. And, you know, I mean, I often will comment when I see political advertisements about what I consider to be effective political advertisements. And so, for example, in the Markey versus Kennedy race locally, I thought the best push for Markey was the ice cream man thing.
Oh, I saw that on you. I like that one. That was good.
Yeah. I mean, basically, it promotes this human side of a person. And I think that's resonates with voters more than issues. And I think it's always been there. And it'll always be
I wonder, can you still hear me? Is that
yes.
All right. It's interesting. Now, if Kennedy was a woman, do you think there'd be more support for him? Because I know a lot of people that you'd normally, you know, like it's not like an Ianna Presley against a long time similar Michael Capiano. It's very different. It's another white guy. He's younger and he's a Kennedy. Right. But I think if he was a woman and maybe a person of color, there might have been a little bit more.
It changes the rules of engagement completely in that regard, you know. So,
but also the places they were, the place they were. Well, no, wait. This is his Senate. Excuse me. So that's like the whole state. Yeah. I don't know. I so many people around here are pro Markey, which is good.
I mean, the thing is that often it works if the people who are of an area sort of start. Yeah. Promoting it, then there's a kind of a confirmation bias that goes into that. So, you know, if the people you know said, oh, this person is this way or that way, the next time you see them on the TV ad, you go, I knew that because, you know, it's actually what you've
already heard. It's a lot of progressives, though. It's a lot of people that were, you know, big Ianna Press, you know, so it's interesting. It's not, I haven't really heard that much support for Kennedy, maybe some younger people. Really young.
Right. Well, it's interesting because not that I paid that much attention to the polls, but Kennedy had been well up in the polls. Now Markey.
Oh, I think it's pretty tight, wasn't it?
Well, last year was Markey had had a reasonably comfortable lead. Now, but that could change too.
Did you watch any other debate? I watched the one last week. I think there's one tonight, actually, right when we finish. But I watched the one last week, and I was starting to kind of pull away from Markey because I felt he was so defensive and on about the super PAC that Kennedy's father's doing. And but then apparently after that, a lot of people felt, you know, he didn't do that bad. So I don't know. I still think, you know, he's going to probably not run again. So
We'll see. We'll see. I mean, a Senate seat is a 6-year seat. So if he doesn't run again, it's still a good, it's still a long haul.
But what's interesting, Robert, is that we don't have ranked choice voting and Kennedy's seat is ridiculous. There's like 10 candidates.
I've been commenting on that. Yes. And I probably am, at least to some people, starting to sound like a cheerleader for ranked choice voting, which I guess I am.
This is a perfect example when there are that many.
Yeah. The main argument in favor of ranked choice voting is not like the Cambridge situation of proportional representation.
No,
that's a totally different thing.
Right.
It really is about being able to vote honestly rather than strategically.
Yeah. And it's more fair. It's like, why should someone, just because they get 23% and maybe, why should they be the...
Well, you know, I'm reminded that when Michael Capuano first ran for, was then the 8th Congressional District, right? Now the numbers have changed, right?
Right, but, Right.
Back when that was open, I think it might have been, was that when the other Joe Kennedy left?
Oh, you're right. That's the seat, I think. Yeah.
Right. So then the thing is, there were multiple candidates. I think there were eight candidates.
Was that his seat? That was my representative? I don't know. Whatever. Yeah, but there were a lot of seats. Yeah.
Right. So the thing is, there were eight candidates going for that particular seat. And Ray Flynn, former mayor of Boston, had been one of the candidates.
Oh, gosh.
It wasn't going to affect me all that much anyway, but the thing is, you had a case where I believe there were seven candidates who were pro-choice and Ray Flynn. He had been ambassador to the Vatican. Right.
Oh, he's real.
And, or maybe he would then become
he's a real staunch Catholic. Yeah.
Exactly. So the thing is, I thought, well, you know, the way it works with vote splitting, if you're one candidate, and then all seven others are, at least to some people, indistinguishable, because if you only cared about the abortion issue, you could very well end up electing the one exceptional candidate who is actually the clear minority support candidate, because the majority of candidates were all split amongst all the other candidates. And that could have happened. But there is a weird phenomenon, like an 11th hour phenomenon that happens in these multi-candidate races where people start either literally bailing out and throwing their support to others, or voters start figuring out who's weak and I better not throw my vote on to them, because if I do, it's going to hurt the whole range of candidates. So what happens is people start consolidating around certain candidates, and it's like a game of political chicken where people have to kind of decide who's somehow the most viable of the surviving candidates.
But the problem is the advertising has real. I've only seen Alan Kaze and Jake Auchincloss. That's the only ads I've seen.
Yeah, but I think more and more. But the ads are becoming less and less the deciding thing, unless it's a real killer ad.
I don't know. For this race, I think that's what people pay attention to. They're watching a lot of news. They're watching local news.
I mean, honestly, I think the marquee ad, the ice cream man ad, that was a winner.
That's a Senate seat.
You win people over with something like that. But for some of these other ones here, I didn't think this would happen, but it seems to have happened in many respects, even at our local city council levels, where the big mailings, the big ads are becoming less important. They're not that they become unimportant. Well,
you're saying social media and all that?
Social media has actually become pretty important.
That's
having
a good
very,
point.
Very well-developed mailing lists. I think it was actually Barack Obama's campaign who really made an art out of that.
I knew that from 08, let me tell you.
Right.
So I knew it because he had door hangers. I had never seen door hangers. We were in Scranton. I said, wow. And then, of course, he was all over social media. So you're right.
Right, exactly.
But there's a lot of older voters. Now, a big criticism of that race is that they're all from Brookline, Newton, or Wellesley, and yet it represents a lot of the South, the town south of that.
So, yeah, well, and that's fair criticism. I suppose if you were the one candidate who was from one of the other places, you might have an advantage.
There's a woman running, Jessie Mermel, who I've known. Actually, I met her in 08 because she was a big Hillary supporter, and we stayed at actually her family's house in Pennsylvania. So I have kind of followed her, and I hope she can get there somewhere because she's good.
Well, it seems like she's one of the candidates where
there's four women. Yeah.
Right, but some other candidates are either bailing out literally, letting it be known that maybe you should vote for this person instead.
She's good. She's really going to go places.
But honestly, elections should not be a game of chicken.
Yep.
The thing is that you should be able to honestly vote for who you think is your preferred candidate, and then have the election system itself actually come up with the winner. So ranked choice voting, it'll be on the ballot in November.
I know. I hope people vote for it.
But I was joking. I said, can we just basically
pass
ranked choice voting, and then we'll do a do over on this?
I know. I agree.
It would be the better way to do it, right? You can't undo the election. That's the way it's going to be.
So, I hope people take it as seriously as they did the candidate vote. I'll tell you that. Let's
talk national one more time here. Again, I want to talk local, sort of local election So about different modes of voting. But, you know, yeah, I was interviewed by a Harvard Crimson reporter yesterday about this whole controversy about mail-in voting.
Right.
And Postal Service and
is there a right wing conspiracy
to sort of undo mail-in voting around the country? Yeah. To me, the jury's still out on that. You know, I tend to, you know, go with Occam's razor on this. Basically, I go with whatever the simplest explanation is.
I think some of the measures taken, which are now have been crawled back by the Postmaster General today. He said we will stop anything until after the election. So yeah. I think they heard loud and clear people are.
Oh, I agree. I mean, even if it's only as a matter of perception, it is best to do that.
Absolutely.
But when people were kind of going on about this stuff, I said, well, okay. And I think it was on August 8th, there was a meeting of the Board of Governors for the United States Postal Service that actually had the Postmaster General.
Wow.
It's his first meeting as a Postmaster General and the whole board there. And I listened to the whole meeting. And I just wanted to kind of hear.
How did you know about it?
Well, it's a recording. It's a recording. Oh, I didn't hear it live.
But so you found out about it through some.
You could just Google it. Yeah, you could find it. And I just tuned in and listened to the whole meeting.
Yeah.
And listened to the introductory remarks from the Postmaster General. I listened to the fiscal report from the Treasury people, who are dealing with it.
How many people are on the Board of Governors?
I think it's something like eight or something like that.
Is it diverse?
Probably not, but I didn't look at, there were no photos. I couldn't really tell.
Oh, okay. All right.
But the thing is that it's unmistakably true that in fact, the fiscal solvency of the Postal Service has been a bit of a question.
Yes.
One of the very first things that the new Postmaster General said was that he had been having discussions. He says, first off, he says, look, contrary to rumor, I'm not doing the bidding of the President of the United States. He says,
but even though I gave him $1 million, whatever. I mean, he's a big donor.
But I think political patronage is how federal appointments have always worked. Well, so that in itself didn't shock me either. But the thing is that he said, oh, we talked to Mnuchin, is it the guy, the Treasury head?
Yeah.
Mnuchin. Mnuchin, what am I thinking?
Whatever.
Right?
Yeah. The money guy. Yeah, the
money guy. Yeah. Sounds like Phil Rizzuto, the money store. So basically, they'd gotten a $10 billion guarantee. You know, so the thing is, so they would be able to float, but they did talk very much about the changes in volumes in the post office, how first-class mail has dropped precipitously, and how package handling, which is much more difficult and much more expensive to do, has grown significantly. Mm. So I'm listening to it, and I'm thinking to myself, yeah, if I was sort of the manager,
there's got to be some changes, yeah.
Yeah, I'd be rejiggering everything and moving things around. So I said, okay, I'll give them a pass on this until you prove to me otherwise, right?
But his timing is a little bad.
The timing is terrible. Yeah. Just terrible.
The
terrible,
optics
terrible.
Don't look good, right?
Not good optics.
Right? Physical mailboxes off of the street.
But I have to tell you, you know, when people were taking photos of trucks hauling away mailboxes and like going, see, look, it's happening. Yeah. I think, come on. And there were even two Cambridge City councilors who were going, look, see, it's happening. I think, seriously,
there, I don't think,
calm down here, right?
But the sorting machines, I think that's the more curious
question for me.
Right. It is true that they have a long-term pension problem, and I think it's related to a deal that they agreed to, which actually is unfair because they're a quasi. So there's a lot of complexity to this.
Right,
They need apparently $160 billion or something to be solved. I heard some outrageous figure, and that's
They don't need it all at once. They need to reconfigure the way they do business in order to get it to work in the long haul, though. That's for sure.
But anyway, let's get to the voting. Yeah. So that was good that you watched that. Yeah.
I have to say I'm fascinated by the way social media and confirmation bias plays into itself that people go, they hear something is true and they go, look, there's the evidence, right? And I go, no, that's not evidence. I'm sorry, it isn't. But so I get a kick out of that. I will admit that, you know.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, back here in Cambridge, and I should say even in Massachusetts, I think that everybody's noticing there are some slowdown in the postal delivery.
Yeah.
But I think that's probably attributable to things like the fact that they have to do social distancing. They have to put somebody there to manage a line out in the lobby at a post office. Yeah. They're using.
Well, there haven't been any lines that I've noticed lately, but
Right. Well, it's better now. It's definitely better. But the thing is that, you know, logistically, it's pretty clear it's been more difficult to actually do the job. Right. And I give those one example. I submitted, we're both doing mail-in balloting.
July 21st, I have it on my thing.
Right. The thing is that the election commissions across the state didn't get their packets of everything until August.
And I can understand that they probably didn't want to send it out piecemeal, even if they had them. But then why, if it's going out from a Cambridge address to another Cambridge address, is it taking so long?
It's spotty. All right. So one of my neighbors, who's also a former elected official, I just started, half hour ago, she told me that they sent in their application on Saturday and got their ballot today.
Oh, come on. I sent mine in July 21st.
All right, no, it's not Saturday. I think it was Friday. Right. Yeah, although I know you did.
Although you personally know somebody, and I won't go into that.
I know.
But I still haven't gotten it. I didn't get it today.
Right. Well, so mine was mailed on the 12th, and now it's 6 days later. It didn't arrive today. So
when was my, can I find out when mine was mailed?
I think I told you. Yours was mailed 2 days
ago. Yours took 6 days from,
and it still hasn't arrived, so it'll take at least 7 days to arrive. I've heard other stories that are even longer, but you know, the thing is, this is not some great grand conspiracy.
But the problem is, Robert, that they're saying you can send in an application, you can send in your an application for a ballot till August 26th.
Exactly.
And I know. How's that supposed to get back by September 1st? Or maybe not.
It shouldn't. Actually, that's one of the things that the board of governors of the U.S. Postal Service said. Yeah. Which they said that in fact they had some real issues with the state legislators and various secretaries of state for setting their deadlines so far back.
Right.
That in fact they may not be able to meet even the most. Established standards for the Postal Service for postmarking and delivery. So the thing is, for example, in Massachusetts, you can still apply for a mail-in ballot as late as August 26th.
Right.
Has to be submitted no later than September 1st.
I know. So that's crazy.
That is crazy. That's a mistake that came from the legislature. Those dates should have been further forward so that there was a little more lag times that you can take that into account. But
all right. But the bottom line, Robert, answered my question is, if you get that ballot and decide you don't want to mail it in,
you can still vote. So
in person. So you can do one or the other.
Yeah. So as it stands right now, and I'll show you a little bit.
Let's go to share your screen.
I'm going to just sort of switch over here for the moment here. Going to actually kind of quickly go right down to here. So this is, that's all right. We'll just leave everything up here. Mm-hmm. So the thing is that they moved the drop box that had been over at the basement entry to 51 Inman Street where the election commission is. They moved it over to the Inman Street side. It's out there, and you can use it from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m.
every day. A person is out there.
And there'll be a person out there, and they arranged it so that this slot is somewhat obstructed, so you can only put in your ballot, and that's it. Right. So you can't put any foreign substances or anything else that in there.
Right.
That's Joyce Gerber, who some of you may remember from a former candidate for school committee.
Right.
But the thing is that in addition to this, and this was the thing I thought was most significant, was that you can take your mail-in ballot. If you're a little unsure about postal delivery, you can bring it here, or you can go to any of the early voting sites, which begin, that starts this coming Saturday, August 22nd, till the following Friday.
Wow.
And they have very, very, so it's Saturday, August 22nd, 2 p.m. to 8 p.m., Sunday the 23rd, 9 to 3, and Monday through Friday, August 24th, 28th, 9:30 to 5.
At all of those places?
And there are three locations, right? Moses Youth Center, formerly called the Area 4 Youth Center, Cambridge Water Department up by Fresh Pond, as well as the Valenti Library, over down East Cambridge. Okay.
They're not even open.
The thing is that, and they will have a box there, and you can actually deposit your mail-in ballot.
That's probably what I'm going to do. Yeah. Right. If I now, ever get my ballot.
Right. And I understand is you won't have to wait online if you just want to drop off a mail-in ballot. If you want to do early voting, and some people, then you, there may be a line and you have to do it that way. Right. So, so anyway,
All right. But here's my question. Somebody mails in their ballot. God knows when they'll get it. Right. But then they go vote in person. Is that going to be caught somewhere? Because then I can hear Trump saying like, oh, that's weird.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So they have this whole check-in system, and they now have kind of an electronic poll pads, what they're calling them now. So that in principle, if everything's working correctly, which I think it is.
Yeah. But if they haven't gotten the ballot yet, they won't know if you mailed it in.
That's true. But the thing is that if you go and you said, well, I don't trust that my ballot's going to be get there in time, and you in a panic, you go running down to the and you vote. Yeah. Okay. Then what will happen? Well, your vote will count as you voted in.
Oh, and then when they get the mail-in ballot, forget
they'll
it.
Go and they go, oh, sorry, this person's already voted. Okay. Now, please, so people shouldn't do that.
I know.
But, you know, but if that were to happen because you get worried.
But
right.
It is important for people to know that just because they get the ballot and they don't send it in doesn't mean they can't vote in person.
Exactly right.
Okay, so I think that's important for people to know.
Yeah, yeah. Right. And it's still absentee voting. That's still an option that people can do.
Right. No, you know, you're right. How is that different?
From early voting?
You go to the election commission.
Right, exactly.
Is that open then?
It's open? There are dates when it'll be open. Somebody will be there to take an absentee ballot as well. So anyway, so there are options, and you just go to the Election Commission website. You can go to my website as well, and it has all the information. I think it's probably worth noting for those people who do still want to vote in person, and I do know some people who do, that of the 34 precincts, 14 of them have moved. And they moved, because of concerns. Like, for a lot of them were in nursing homes, and there's
nursing homes and schools.
And schools. So the thing is,
or libraries too, maybe.
Right, and the schools are actually quite available. In fact, they're even, at least one case I know of, they're actually going to have nothing else going on in the school that day because they can afford to do it since so much is online now anyway. But they did
change them for most of them.
Yeah, a lot of things changed, a lot of consolidation, so there are multiple precincts.
It's easy enough. Are they going to send out a postcard about it, or they don't?
Yes, everybody is going to get their traditional postcard. Okay. And I will actually do one more share screen here. Okay. I think I have it here. And by the way, there is this link where you can actually check the status of your ballot.
Right, of your ballot. Right.
Worth knowing about.
Yes, that's very good.
But I don't go whipping right by it here. But
I think you went by it.
Here. But I do want to say here, there is, the election commission has it. Also, there is a complete list of the revised list of the polling locations so that you can actually see. I have in bold the ones that have been moved. So you can see there is a certain amount of consolidation. You know, the voting at like.
That's excellent. So this is pretty clear. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm putting that out. The Election Commission's putting it out.
Yeah.
Everybody should be sort of sharing this, as much of this information as possible.
On all the lists.
So that people should know. Yeah.
So, Robert, how much time do we have left? I want to see some of the Starlight Square stuff.
So it's we've got about 12 minutes to go here.
I mean, I know there's some city meetings this week, I guess. The AHO Ordinance.
The Affordable Housing Overlay Ordinance Committee meeting
tomorrow,
is.
Tomorrow, I think.
I think it is tomorrow evening. There's no public comment at that one. I want to emphasize that.
Oh, at ordinance meetings? There's no.
They normally would be, but they already had one ordinance committee meeting that was, I think, primarily, if not exclusively, public comment. So I only noticed this afternoon.
That was
a month and a half ago or something. But anyway, so this one here will just be counselors jabbering about it. So there's no public comment.
5 o'clock.
Yeah, so that's tomorrow.
Okay.
Right. You mentioned Starlight Square. So Starlight Square is kind of interesting. We've been sort of talking this up a little bit here. They had a ribbon cutting for grand opening of it.
I missed that. I went by I was walking home with Debbie Gaylor for like at 8 o'clock or 8:15 on Friday. And
it was in the morning. It turned out it was in the morning. I only found that out like the night before.
I was wondering.
We could take a couple of
quick, were you at the puppet show? I see that you have a nice
I was not at the puppet show, but the thing is that
it's a nicer photo than I get.
Yeah, so the thing is, these were just ones I would give an attribution who provided the photo, but it was in the Central Square Business Improvement District promo, so I just sort of borrowed them. But anyway, it was kind of
we couldn't have showed those.
It was kind of delightful. They had a group of, I guess they were Cambridge Ridge Latin High School students, Lenny's Funk Band or something like that. Playing Peter Valentine, who's, you know, in many respects is the one who sort of put the name up there for Starlight Square. So, you know, they provided a special seat for him right up front. And there's old Peter. I'm just whisking through here. This is actually his brother-in-law was reading some of Peter's poetry.
That's his brother-in-law?
Yes. His sister was there as well. And, you know, he was like, you know, the star attraction. It was really kind of fun. You know, you can see some known figures up on the stage, including Peter DeMuro from the Dance Complex, Reverend Ellis, Mark Boyes Watson, Patrick Barrett in the back, etc.
Oh, I see Patrick.
So, this is Matt Boyes Watson, that's Mark's son, and he was really kind of the person who designed it. He's also was a main player in putting together Bow Square over in Somerville.
Oh, that's true.
You know, so, you know, he's like a chip off the old block in terms of being a mover and shaker about these things. Michael Monesteem, who looks, even in a mask, Michael comes shining through.
You know? Yeah, he does.
And here is Peter Valentine and Jason Weeks from the Arts Council.
How come Peter's not wearing a mask? He's holding it.
Sometimes he was, sometimes he wasn't. I think everybody around him. Everybody else would wear a mask when they were near him. So, but city manager Louis DePasquale, one of his more charming traits is his, regular man about town. He knows everybody in town pretty well, this is, I forget the fellow.
Sean Hope? No.
Chris Hope. That's Chris it. Hope. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, Loop Lab, who they do business in Central Square, and Peter and Jason. I mean, I'm just sort of whipping through here. Denise's in one of these here. I got a kick out of here is that Joseph and Morris Nagar of the Nagar family, who own a lot of property in Central Square. So I've known them for years. So they were chatting with them. And then as I was going through Graffiti Alley, there's the mural of two of them side by side. And I said, this will be fun. Let me just put the two pictures side by side. It's about 25 years apart, but I thought it was kind of a kick. And the exterior of it actually really felt a lot like a street, but just to kind of whisk down through, so there's some ones that were part of the promos that was going up on the Central Square bid that I think I got in the mail today. Again, this was some of the musicians from the ribbon cutting. This was a real nice, well-lit shot of that same front piece, which really looks kind of great, I have to say. I look at that and said, man, that's just great. Again, just a night shot of some.
You know what? Maybe you can see me. I'm back there somewhere.
All right, so this is the puppet show, right?
Yeah.
Punch and Judy?
It's Judy Punches Back.
Yeah, well, that's why you went.
Yeah, that's why I went. Yeah. It was good, yeah.
All right, and again, this is.
You can go back. Go back to that. That's Deborah Wiseman, who was giving the introduction, because she's like one of the theater directors at the
Central Square Theater. Yes. I don't know. Actually, this fellow's name is listed, but I forgot it now. It was in the promo. I actually did see some of the dancers from the Dance Complex just doing a class there.
I went by there and saw some young kids doing
it. Yeah. So even just during the day, there's all these things happening here. Just a few area shots of it really is like it's in many ways, this is not only a venue, it's also kind of an art installation. It's kind of great that way, And again, this is just a shot looking at the
That's almost like the shot I sent you.
Yeah. And I love some of the artwork. That you just sort of see displayed, pretty much everywhere. So, it's been kind of great, and I think everybody needs to understand this was, it's kind of like a great gesture to sort of the arts community as well as the business community in Central Square to create.
I just hope they can
a great gesture.
I mean, I know it's free, the performances. I donated some money. There's a youth program through Central Square Theater. So I think if you can, donate money. It's nice. You can do it online, but
yeah,
it's a great, I just worry about if it's raining, how they're protecting everything, but I'm sure they have it all figured out.
I think most of it's pretty weatherproof. But the thing is, you know, but you obviously there's certain things you just won't be able to do. And if it's rainy and windy or something, you know,
well, that's true with the restaurants and everything.
Yeah. You know, by the way, Central Square Advisory Committee is having a meeting tomorrow night where we're not deciding anything. It's but I had suggested to them that, you know, in light of a lot of the stories that are out there in the world about, you know, various places either being sold or businesses closing, businesses trying to survive, that we should just have a general discussion about, you know, sort of the future of Central Square, you know, which is what we'll just have. It's kind of just a conversation tomorrow, but I'm still doing my best to try and, you know, get that conversation in as many places as we can, to whatever degree that there are going to be vacancies and, you know, some really catastrophic changes, I think people will see, then there's also opportunities associated with that, so that if people are at least mindful of the kinds of things that you want to see coming out of the other end of this hideous tunnel, people had better start thinking about that, you know? It doesn't have to be all bad outcomes, you know, but if you don't think about it and don't try, it could be. So, you know, I think that's, you know, part of the conversation we're going to have.
I just can't believe it's August 18th.
And we're still
dealing with this.
We're still dealing with this. It is true. But
it's really something.
Yeah, it's really something. But, you know, the thing is that, you know, on any given day, you can be, you'll either get pessimistic news or optimistic news about sort of where this is all heading. You know, for a while there was actually, I could tell, there was a noticeable little uptick in the transmission of coronavirus and the number of positive cases showing up in Cambridge. That is, now it's dropping a little bit here. So, you know, you got to, you know, stay on your game, folks. You know, this isn't gone and it's not going to be away. And the students, as the students come in and there's more people coming and going, there's more possibilities of reintroduction of this, and people are going to have to be really about this.
That's one of the last week there was the police camera meeting, but there was one with the colleges. I listened to both of them, but the colleges, it was interesting. MIT, pretty amazing kind of thing that they have set up over there.
Like incredibly frequent testing of students, staff,
anybody, and a limited amount of students coming in, but
limited amount of everything. But all the universities are grappling with this. It's kind of interesting. Remember there was this book called Laboratories of Democracies that was sort of a big thing during the Clinton administration. But in a way it's like every university is like a laboratory of infectious disease control, where it's not like it's one set rule that's just sort of laid down. It's the people are kind of being creative and coming up with best practices.
But unfortunately, then, though, I think in Cambridge, though, it's a city versus, like, I heard talks like Vassar or Westport. Yeah. I mean, they're self-contained little bubbles, as some of the students say.
Right.
We're not a bubble here. We sort
we're not a bubble here. Yeah. Right. And so I think it's probably fair to say that if MIT says we think we've got a good plan, that people at Harvard are listening and going, I think we like a lot of those.
Well, Harvard presented too, and they have.
Yeah. But the thing is, it's not like they're working.
They're not working independent of each other.
And nor are they working independently of the Broad Institute and the City of Cambridge and the Health Commission people.
Yeah. I mean, we have so many, you know, we have a wealth of data here and resources.
No, I think we have a lot to be proud of in terms of how we've done the response in this here, but, you know, but we're all still flesh and blood human beings, and people still have to step up and be mindful. You know, and I do see a lot of slacking off. And
you do? I'm so glad I live where I live here, because everyone wears a mask, mostly.
For the most part, down the street, you know, but if you go through Central Square, you'll see a lot of people are not.
Well, I'm trying to go around Central Square.
I know.
You know, in general, I just, you know, stores, never an issue. Everyone, you don't go in, you don't know where to mask.
That's right. And
no arguments about it. I mean, you hear about this going around.
Right. It's just like, no, I think we're doing pretty well about this. Yeah. But, you know, even nationally, you know, it's in some of the states that it was suddenly there was a real splurge going on. The Positivity was up, but now it's declining. And then we say it's about 2 weeks before the deaths will then peak. Yeah. And now they are starting to drop off.
Yeah.
So now the question is, well, what kind of secondary waves do you encounter down the road? I mean, that's the next thing to say.
I know.
Be watchful for.
Well, you know, we'll so see it's a pretty serious thing. Let's see, 2 weeks, it'll be what? What's the date of 2 weeks?
It'll be August 32nd. No, actually, it'll be September 1st, and then I'll be back teaching then too.
Today,
it's really getting really close. We're
that's primary
down
day.
The neck of September,
and we're gonna have
that's
a
right. It's coming up really, really soon. So
all right.
Anyway, we should sort of wind off. It down now. We're down to our last 15 seconds here.
See you in two weeks.
So we'll definitely be back in a couple of weeks. And don't forget to vote one way or another, but only once. And we'll see you again soon on Cambridge Inside Out.
Bye-bye.